Well, welcome to The Path Forward. Tonight, we're going to talk about cybersecurity and how to secure your house, how to secure your home network, how to secure your personal information, and how to secure your family's personal information. I've got a good friend of mine, Seth. We worked together in the security business for several years now, and we're going to try and give you the high level of things you could consider and should consider when building any kind of technology in your house and deploying any kind of technology. And we'll start out with the threat. I'll give my 5-minute spiel, and then Seth, you can chime in with your assessment of the threat. But I see three threats right now. Number one is social engineering. There's been an uptick in social engineering attacks across the spectrum, from both commercial, government, as well as private. And I'll give you an example. The last couple of months, there's been an uptick of social engineering related to, you get a call from somebody, it's either a bank or in this case, it was a sheriff's office. I've gotten this call like 3 times now. And I know how the game's played when you have a warrant out for your arrest or you have, you know, any kind of issue with the police, right? They will either wait for to roll you up at a traffic stop, or they will, if it's, you know, felony related, they'll come to your house. And I've seen several people rolled up for a lot of different reasons, but they never call you and say, there's a warrant, you need to like do this thing. And the last time they called me, it was, hey, this is Deputy so-and-so at the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. We need you to come in. There's a warrant. And, you know, and so I'm like, sure, I'll play along for a few minutes. Let's see when do they get to the money? Because there's always a lead in to the money. And so he goes, I need you to stay on the phone. It's not how the game's played. I need you to stay in contact. That way, if you don't answer in the third ring, then we issue a bench warrant. Okay, that's not how the game's played. So long story short, I'm driving to my butcher, talking to this guy on the phone, and I get about halfway to the butcher, which is about 20 minutes away. And he's like, you know, I just got this piece of paper that said that there's a $6,000 fee because this was not, you didn't show up for court and this wasn't paid, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, so there's the money. And so I feigned this, you know, I feigned this surprise and disgust. But I will say this about the whole thing. It was very, if you don't know any better, it was very, very well done. If you know the system and you know how the system's supposed to work, then you won't be surprised, right? You won't get caught off guard. But they're playing on the fact that you get caught off guard. And the same thing with social engineering and phishing via email. You know, they'll send an email that looks very, very much like a bank email. There might be one or two characters that are off. Most people don't pay attention. They click on the link. There's either malware or harvesting credentials. So those are the two leading threats that I see right now. The third one is ransomware. And ransomware, especially in this day and age, is gotten incredibly insidious, because it'll go after specific parts of the network first, where things will just start to work. You'll have these anomalous issues, and then all of a sudden everything stops working. Those are the big three that I've seen just in the last 6 months. Now, malware is another one, but really ransomware is where the money is, because they infect your system, they encrypt all your data, and then they put you on a customer service model. They tell you what model you're on, and you decide to pay it, or you rebuild your network, or you have the insurance company negotiate a payment, and hopefully you'll get the keys back. So those are the top three I see. And Seth, I'll turn it over to you, and you can talk through what you've seen.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with that. You know, kind of to your story on social engineering, I think it was last weekend, I got a text message that, you know, it's from my bank, and they just want to let me know that there's some anonymous charges on my account, and I need to, you know, click the link in the text message and call them right away. And I'm like, okay. So what's funny though is, you know, went and looked at the bank accounts, and I was like, oh, there actually are some charges on the credit card. Sweet. And I'd been traveling, so I was like, okay, well, you know, it's the good old, I can't remember what it was in this case, but, you know, somebody went to the Home Depot in a state I don't live in and bought something like that, right? It's like, oh no, I do remember what it was. So it was AWS charges, even better. So there's like a $38 Amazon Web Services charge randomly. Nice. I'm like,
nice.
Okay, well, that's not on that account. I don't do that. And then after the $38 one, yeah, a week later, there's like a $200 one. And then a week later, there's like a $300 one. So I did actually have to call my bank. I'm like, hey, something's wrong. So in that instance, that actually helped me out. But, you know, the general hook is like, you know, hey, contact us through this medium we're giving you. And then you're basically hooked up with the scammers, right? So that's the first one I've seen. So they named a specific app, you know, so there's like Zelle and PayPal, and I think you can send money through Snapchat and WhatsApp, and there's a bunch of other ones now too, right? Apple. And so, you know, you just pick whatever one, and somebody's going to say like, hey, there's a problem and it's this app and you need to contact us, which is where your bank. So that happens all the time. I see it all the time. I'm sure most everyone listening sees it. The other thing is, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I get a lot, like 7 a week, average about 1 a day, of a random text message from a random number that's like, hello, or are you there? You know, just something like that. So there's that going on. I think that's more recent. Because people are curious, right? And so if they can't get you with, hey, this is your bank, they're going to get you with, you know, some random thing. And, you know, I'm a millennial. And so in my experience, most of the people that are generation or two older than I am, they're curious. So if you ping them with a period or a hey, they're going to respond back and be like, who is this? And you're like, oh, let's start the conversation. So, you know, you gotta be cynical and, jaded and just suspect that everybody's a bad person, honestly, when you're in the cyber world. So, there's that. Then there's the,
and by the way, that the text messaging that he's talking about is called smishing.
Yep.
And that's where they call you or they send you a text message and they want you to perform an action. We'll talk about by the numbers, how to respond to all of these. So, but need to call that out because look, you can't be in the security business and not have some cool gang name or some cool name for some kind of an attack. We call them indicators of compromise in the industry, but you got to have a cool gang name for that. Otherwise you can't publish it and you can't take credit for it. So yeah, if some of these names that we throw out seem strange, it's because some security guy in his basement in his underwear that was writing a book came up with the name so he could be special. In San Francisco, yeah.
Or Silicon Valley, yeah. Yeah. It's probably his mom's basement, actually, even though he makes $34 million a year.
Yeah, probably. He's like, hasn't moved out ever, yeah.
Where's my meatloaf? Yeah. So, you know, smishing. Phishing remains popular. I have a lot of, you know, Nigerian princes that contact me regularly and are asking for money for various, endeavors that they're involved in. And you know, same with, you just get, you know, crap email essentially. So phishing is still popular, and that's not something that, generally reels me in, pun intended. But you know, every once in a while you'll get a good phishing attack. And so, you know, you pop open your email and it's an exact replica of, you know, something that you do. And they're telling you that you bought this thing and you need to, you know, click this button if it's the wrong amount or it's not yours or whatever. And every once in a while, I mean, I'll see one that's plausible and I'm cynical. So I'm just like, no, not happening. But I mean, they do a good job. They make stuff pretty realistic. And especially if you know, are doing something, in the e-commerce world, which we all do, whether you want to or not. And, some on their end, they're compromised. And, you know, professionally, I see that stuff a lot. And so, you know, you're just going along minding your own business, buying something from, you know, Joe's Hardware, or, you know, maybe it's a big chain store. And then all of a sudden you get an email and you're like, oh my gosh, like I didn't buy that. And it's from, you know, wherever it is that you were just buying something, or you had just bought something, Costco or, you know, whatever. And they reel you in that way. You click the button and next thing you know, you've got problems with your bank account. And they're still generally going to ask you for some kind of information. To your point, Steve, there, it's always a, you know, hey, you need to, you know, give us your bank account number, or remind us of your password, or, you know, transfer this money for whatever reason. And I mean, anytime there's an action that there someone is asking, physically asking, or through email asking you to perform, that's when you need to be like, hold on a minute. And you know, most people are people pleasers, right? And so if somebody puts you on the spot, it's the same thing with like cops and a traffic stop, right? They put you on the spot and they're like, you need to tell me this so I can help you. And you're like, I don't need to tell you that. And there's absolutely nothing that they're going to be able to do to you that is actually, you know, to your benefit. So why would you do that? And it's the same thing. You know, somebody calls or sends you an email or whatever. If you're like, maybe I really need to give them my bank account number. Why don't you try sleeping on it? See if it still makes sense tomorrow. So there's always, and with phishing, so in the commercial world, there's a sense of urgency, authority, and fear. Those are the key pieces. And so they're going to pretend to be the FBI or your boss or something. They're going to tell you right now, if you don't do it right now. And then if you don't, bad thing is going to happen to you. And so, you know, if somebody's asking you to perform an action of some type, giving, they want you to give them some kind of information or access. And they're looking for, you know, any of those key things. That's when you should just kind of stop cooperating and tell them you'll get back to them, and then hang up the phone or don't reply to the email or whatever. But yeah, so I still see phishing. There is ransomware. You know, I see that in the commercial side. Personal space, I don't see a lot of that anymore. What I'm actually seeing is, and it's not individuals reporting it, it is, shall we say, black hat organizations, which means cyber criminals. There are lots of cyber criminals that talk to each other in places that you can eavesdrop. Botnets. So there are large denial of service operations going on. And to do that, you need to own people's infrastructure, which we can probably get into a little here if we need to. But I see bots. So I see home stuff that has been taken over unbeknownst to the people that own it and is being used for illegal or nefarious purposes. So that's mine.
Yeah. So let's unpack the phishing side of the house first, because I think that's going to be the one that's most prevalent for people. First things first, right? Whenever you get a message from some, let's just say, third party outside of what you normally communicate with, the first thing you should do is look at the header information, right? Look at the email header and see, you know, where it's from, if the email address is from a Gmail account. Like, The latest ones are, they send you an invoice and say this invoice is unpaid. Then you go look at the email address. It's like a Gmail or a Hotmail or a Yahoo account. You know it's bogus right there. And if you use Shop, you'll see a bunch of emails from Shop anytime you order anything. So you won't see a string of email, let's just say email information that's related to Hotmail or anything else. It'll be a Shop email address, or it'll be an email address from the company that you're doing business with. If it's somebody else, then the next thing to look at after you look at the header information and the email address is look at, and the header information, I mean, if you go up to the email and say view source, it'll show you where it came from. which server, which domain, which IP scale. And if you're not tech savvy, really what you want to look for is the email, and then look at the body of the message and look for misspellings, look for grammar that's off, look for logos that are off, et cetera. So there's a few things that you look for when you're looking at phishing. Never, ever, ever infinity click on an attachment in an email if you don't know who the sender is. That's the first thing. And secondly, your bank will never send you an email that prompts you to take an action. And if you get those emails, pick up the phone and call your bank directly and look up their number, go to Google, look up their number, and then call them from the number that you get from Google, not any numbers related to what's in the email, because that will give you a direct line to the bank, and you can, you know, and I'll give you a case in point. I got a fraud alert on my phone, looked like it came from my bank. Then I got a phone call right away, and they knew the whole script that my bank does every single time there's a fraud alert. And they read through the whole script. They even knew my name and my rank and everything else. And so we got all the way into it, and they're like, well, you need to tell me which account it is. I'm like, wait a minute. Shouldn't you know that? Shouldn't you know the last four of the account? And they sat there for a second and then click, right? It's asking those critical questions as you're going through, looking through an email or dealing with somebody that calls you on the phone. Ask the critical questions. Like, why would your bank will never call you? They will never call you. They'll send you a letter, or they will, usually it's a letter via snail mail is what they'll do. Or they'll send a text to your phone and say fraud alert, and tell you to log into your account. They most of the time, they don't even send you a link. They'll just say, hey, did you authorize these charges? Yes or no? And that's all you get. And that's all you should get. So the action that you drive out of that is the action of going to verify what you've seen with somebody that's at the bank that's completely outside of that chain of events. We call it, you know, an out-of-band communication. You want to establish out-of-band communications with your bank. And in this case, I called the bank, and it was very, very, you know, talked to their security team for like 30 minutes, outlined the whole scenario, outlined the entire script that they read, outlined all the questions so they could put together a bulletin to send out to all the bank members, right? So again, if you're not savvy and you're not tech savvy, you can get caught up in this stuff really, really easily. So with that said, that's the first thing. Anything, did I miss anything with that, Seth?
No. So there's one thing I'd interject there. So the easy way around this, realistically, is it if you're looking at your, you know, bank account, credit card, checking account, whatever, right? The things that you're using where your money is, like once a week, and you're getting, you know, emails, text messages. I mean, we all get the critical extend your warranty for whatever freaking thing in the mail, right? And that looks legit, and really it's fake from some fake fly-by-night company that wants you to pay them to, they provide a warranty, but it's not a really good warranty for whatever it is, your air conditioner, your car, whatever, right? So even if you're getting stuff in the mail, if it's not coming by certified letter, or if you're not getting served, who cares? And secondly, if you're not seeing charges in your bank account, who cares? So a lot of it you can just ignore, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it, as far as smishing goes, so I get those random text messages from the Myanmar slave camps literally at least five times a week. The last one I got, hey, do you have any plans today? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bomb a railroad, rape some midgets, and I'm going to destroy a church. What about you? I mean, you got to, I always send back stuff like send nudes, you know, things like that I know are not going to get a response to. But I get at least five of those a week. And I don't always respond back. Some of them I do. But you're going to get those. You're going to get text messages for gift cards. You're going to get text messages for, you know, from your bank. I just ignore them. And you could block the number if you want, but I can just tell you that they cycle through numbers. They have a thing that connects to a company like Twilio that literally just picks a landline and ships the call out. So you could block 50 numbers and it won't stop them from sending you messages. It only in a few cases where they have just a very few number of phone numbers that they can dial from, then and only then will you see any kind of slowdown, because it's not going to stop, right? So, but smishing, the whole point of it to send you a text is to get you to take an action within the text message that drives you to some site that they own and to get you to take an action. And I'll give you a case in point. I was literally on a call with the CEO of the last company I was working for, and I got a text message that was supposedly from the CEO. And I stopped the call and said, "Hey, did you send out a message?" And no, I didn't. I said, "Because I just got a text message from you that says I need to go pull W-2s from the company. And I assume it's not you, but you never know, right?" But it's that kind of stuff where they want to catch you in the middle of something. So you just take an action and you don't really think through until you're on the other side and you go, "Wait, why did I just do that?" Right? Because everybody gets busy. Everybody gets, frustrated, whatever the case may be. And you don't necessarily pay attention to what you're doing. And that's how they get you. That's what they want to do. So, yeah, did I get everything on that one?
Well, I have yet to get any nudes back. I've been hoping for so long, I've been hoping that I'm just going to get, some guy in Ukraine or India or whatever on a bearskin rug, but it hasn't happened yet. So you're right. And again, it hits those, sense of urgency, authority, right? They want an immediate action from you. They want to scare you with, some dire consequence if you don't do what they say. Those are key indicators.
So you want to talk through defense against ransomware? Because there's a lot to this topic that we could spend an hour on this, but we should talk.
Yeah. I was talking to an undisclosed friend of a friend, small business owner, not too long ago. And I was like, that's a really old laptop you have there. I mean, this thing is like the size of a briefcase. How do you still have that? And he was like, "Well, I don't really want to pay for a new one. I like the one that I have from, 10 years ago." Okay. What do you do with that? "Oh, well, I just kind of use it for my Facebook and, keep up with my grandkids and, this and that." And okay. "You do any, personal stuff on there for banking, or you do any of your work stuff on there?" "Well, yeah, I do." Okay. That's a big problem. And so I proceeded to explain to him why that's a big problem. And so the reason is, if you have old hardware, like something that's more than 2 years old, there's probably something that is known as a vulnerability in that thing. And it doesn't matter if it's a laptop, a desktop, a TV connected to the internet, a freaking Samsung fridge that doesn't work right, that's hooked to the internet, your washing machine, doesn't matter. The point is there are armies of people that are exploiting different layers of software on those things. And they find those vulnerabilities. And that goes back to what I was talking about with bots and DDoS, denial of service attacks. And the reason people don't like denial of service attacks is because it shuts down commerce sites. So for an average person, who cares? But the problem is they're taking over your stuff to do that to somebody else. And that's not good. And the way they do that is they exploit a vulnerability because something is outdated, and it's because you're not updating the software, the firmware, the freaking hardware. Some of the stuff you can't update. I mean, there was a hardware vulnerability disclosed by Apple, a problem with the chip that you can't fix. So if you just own that device, I can own that device from my basement. you know, with my mom bringing me meatloaf and use that device against somebody else. And meanwhile, you have no idea that I'm using your device to, you know, go try and DDoS the White House or whatever. So the gist of it is, for the average person, if you're going to have stuff on the internet, don't have old stuff on the internet. And if it's going to be on the internet, you need to take care of it. So it is like a car. You've got to take it in to have the tires rotated. You've got to have the oil changed. If you don't know how to take care of it, you need to have somebody that's going to take care of it for you. And, you know, in the computer world, a lot of it, you can do a little bit of cursory research on YouTube or, you know, Google it or whatever. As far as update and patching and set your settings. Like if you're using Windows, you can set them automatically to update. But you need to check to make sure that stuff's configured. And, you know, a lot of people just kind of zone out like, well, it should just work. I turn it on and it works. And it's like, yeah, what other things in your life are like that? It's just magically going to work for you. Like, really? And so that's the problem. And, you know, as Americans, you know, I've got like 50 devices on my freaking home network, right? And I'm a security guy, so I look at what those devices are doing, and they're talking to China and doing all kinds of shit that I don't want them to do. And so they're on a VLAN, which is a guest network. And so that's another thing. If you have Wi-Fi at your house and you have all the different neat things that you bought and your kids bought and their friends bought and everybody else bought, and it's all on your local network, you need to set up a guest network and make sure that the only things on your network with your router are things that matter to you, that are, you know, your computer that you're gonna do banking on, or stuff that you're gonna take the time to make sure that it's updated, patched, healthy.
And so, talking about patching there for a second, the biggest thing you can do to save yourself from, let's just say, any kind of malware, the first thing is keep everything patched and up to date, right? Because that's, most people have never patched their Linksys router that's been sitting in their closet or in their office for the last 10 years. You very rarely look at it. But there's firmware updates that come to, you know, will come for a certain point, and then they'll discontinue the line. As a rule, I typically try and upgrade devices. And by the way, if you have a cable modem, a modem from like CenturyLink or one of the others, don't plan on the carrier upgrading shit. They don't upgrade anything. They tell you that they manage those devices, but they don't. So
they don't even manage the passwords to those devices. So you want some guy in Russia on your network, that's how you do it.
Yeah. So a good rule of thumb is to put a router in front of that and set the firewall rules. And look, most of these routers are 192.168.0.1 or 1.1 or 1.0. And it's admin. First thing you should do is go in and change the admin credentials to that box, and you do it through a web page. Just type in HTTP, you know, 192.168.1.0.1, and it should take you to the admin page. Most of the routers, especially the access points that are coming out now, is the password's on the bottom of it, right? And it's a long password. You can change it if you want, but I would suggest you change all your passwords. And then another rule of thumb around the house is, with most of these devices, you can go in and turn them off in the middle of the night. Like, all my devices go into airplane mode every single night. I don't leave anything in either Wi-Fi. Definitely don't leave anything beaconing in 5G. I don't do any browsing or use any Wi-Fi or wireless networks in any public spaces other than to, you know, browse the internet. I don't connect for any reason unless I'm going to just, you know, do a Google search for something. I don't do any banking in public spaces. I don't do any banking at hotels. I don't do any, you know, if I'm doing work stuff, I have a VPN that I connect direct to work. So that's point-to-point encryption. That's really the only way to be sure that your communications are secure. And here's the thing. there's a setting in most of these routers that you could buy now that can turn things off at night. So if you don't want your kids browsing the internet in the middle of the night, you can set hours that the modem just turns itself off and they can't communicate with anything. Now if they are still connected to the network, they can, you know, the cell network, they can still browse, but you could put parental restrictions on the phone. I will tell you that parental restrictions are a pain in the ass, but it's well worth it if you want to keep your kid away from content. And here's the other thing too. And I'll do a whole show on kids and content and kids and applications, right? Because we're technology immigrants, right? We migrated into technology over the years. Kids are immersed in it from the time that they're like five or six all the way, you know, sometimes two or three until they're teenagers. So they're a lot more tech savvy than we were. So they're able to adapt and move faster than the rest of us. So if you're a parent and you want to keep control of your kids, the best way to do that is to make sure that you're enabling parental controls on the phone or device that they have. And it's going to cost you some time, but it'll also save you a lot of pain later. So public service announcement on that. I'm going to do a whole show on that where I have, you know, a walkthrough setting up parental controls on devices, et cetera. So, but a big part of maintaining your home network is patching and running the updates on all of your devices. And then a good rule of thumb is retiring things and moving things to setting up a guest network and moving things to a guest network that are at end of life and you're still using. Like if you have one of the first Kindles, it still communicates via cellular back to Amazon even today. I have one somewhere around here and it still communicates back to Amazon. So you should be very wary of what you have running your house. Like I don't have any IoT devices. That's Internet of Things. Like it's like your stove, it's your refrigerator, your television set. Everything's hardwired and there's no cameras on any of those things. And I even have, if you have a one of the thermostats, and whether it's Google or whether it's one of the others, they're all phoning home too. And they're all connected to the internet. If you have a garage door opener that uses your Wi-Fi network to communicate so you can open your garage door a block away from your house with your phone, you should turn all that stuff off at night. That's why turning your router off will disconnect that device from the internet so nobody can go and activate it in the middle of the night, or worse, while you're on vacation. Because there's something we haven't talked about that there's still a thing. And I know a lot of people think that the wireless is secure. It's not. Even if you don't beacon out the SSID, which is the ID of the box, whether you call it FBI van 1, 2, 3, or 4, whatever, your Linksys router, whatever, even if you give it a name and you turn off the SSID, it still beacons out every time you make a connection to it. So you can still see it if you're looking for it and you're moving around. And you've got a wireless crawler, you can literally see it as you drive through the neighborhood. There was a trick years ago where you use a tennis ball can and you had use it as an antenna and pointed at specific buildings. You could go, it's called war driving. You could go and browse that network and see that network and see what it, you know, see what was on it. If you could connect to it, it wasn't encrypted. So there's a lot of tricks of the trade, but the biggest thing you can do for yourself is to keep everything current and up to date. And when you get to a system that's end of life, retire it and just disconnect it from everything. You can use it as a backup. You can use it as a, you know, your fail safe or some kind of a contingency, but you want to turn that shit off because if it sends a signal, it can be monitored. It can be listened to and it can be hacked. And now I try and minimize my RF footprint for everything I do. And I'm not always successful because, you know, I've got iPhones, I've got iPads, I've got laptops, I've got, you name it. I got a mountain of technology in this house, radios, et cetera. And you'd be surprised how much of this stuff will and does connect to the internet and uses Wi-Fi versus a cell network. So words to live by. And I can't stress enough either, and Seth, I know you're going to talk about this ad nauseum, but operating systems like Windows and now Apple, they all have AI running. And if you've upgraded to the current version of Apple's OS, their AI is scraping everything you put on your screen. So you have no sense of privacy anymore. So if you're like me and I'm a rev back and I won't upgrade any of my devices to the new AI and the new OS, then you're always going to be a step back and have a vulnerability. So you're making that risk-based choice, but you're also deciding, you know, what risk am I willing to take? And I keep the rest of my operating systems up to date because, look, Microsoft's got Copilot. If you have Copilot, scraping all your shit and it's sending it back to Microsoft. If you have Apple, scraping all your shit, sending it back to Apple. It's just the nature of the beast, right? I know I went off on a tangent, but there's so much information to talk about related to this.
A little bit of information there. Yep. Yeah. So let me go back to the home network thing.
Sorry about that. I disconnected myself.
Hey, welcome back. So I was just saying, you know, let's go back to the home network thing for a second. So again, you know, if you're just like, I don't know what these guys are talking about and make it stop. It's scary. I don't like it. Don't have the Wi-Fi network. So you can, you know, you can go out and buy a modem, or your cable company will provide a modem, and you can, most all of them, you can look up whatever it is they sent you or the one that you bought, and there's a way to turn off the Wi-Fi. And you can run a good old cable to your computer. And if you do that, then nothing else in your house is going to connect to your network because there's no network, right? So, you know, is that practical for most of us? No. But understand that you can go on YouTube and you can Google or search your modem, whatever you have, whatever that box is that's plugged in on your counter. Chances are there's a YouTube video that talks about how to configure it and what to search. And Steve mentioned you can go into the, you can drop in your IP address to your router and change configuration on your router. You can Google how to do that. You can search that on YouTube and they'll tell you how to do that. There's lots of helpful videos about tech stuff. So all you really got to know is, hey, it says this on the label, and start searching for it. And you can probably figure out what it is and they'll tell you, you know, what you need to do to get into it, to change the password or turn something off or configure it.
And I would say if you've never done it, it's worth doing. It's worth going through the pain to figure it out because it's a lot easier than you think it is. And there'll be a bunch of different boxes inside of that that say, you know, turn on IP forwarding, block ports. And you can look all that stuff up in the University of YouTube and it will walk you through all of those things and what ports you need open, what ports you don't. And, you know, it's like if you're a gamer and you use Steam or you use, what's the chat? I can't think of the chat that gamers use.
Discord.
If you have either one of those, the CIA owns you. They are on your box. They are listening. Your Discord's being listened to. I don't give full stop. I don't care what you think is safe. They are listening. And they've probably got chat set up that you're probably in and don't even realize it's run by the CIA. So the other part of this equation is limiting your exposure to the internet to just things that you need to do. If you're just browsing and you're just, you know, you're just doing Google searches, browsing the internet, then you should be fine. But if you're in social media, especially on Facebook, let me tell you what Facebook does to your box. First of all, most of the browser laws have been stretched to the absolute limit of legality by Facebook, which means every keystroke you make, every action you take, everything you browse, everything you say into your mic is being recorded by Facebook. So Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, all owned by Facebook. Meta, whatever that is. Anyway, so limiting your exposure to those things is also another way to limit your exposure to who's monitoring your box. And the other thing is limiting the amount of chinesium that you buy and add to your network related to technology, because China came out this week and openly admitted that everything they make, and they were talking specifically about solar panels and solar devices that are in the U.S. and power stations in the U.S. They all phone home, and they said it out loud. So limiting your exposure to all of that also limits your footprint, and your footprint is what you need to manage. You were going somewhere else, and I totally interrupted you, and there's, like I said, there's so much information. And then, by the way, this is part one of probably a three-part series just talking about technology. One of them is going to be completely on social media and managing social media. So, yeah. And then I'll follow this episode up with a Substack article that outlines all of these things and what to do. And I'll have some how-to in there too, especially for the router, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. So anyway.
So my point with the home network stuff is, having been on the other side of the fence working for and with the government, what really befuddles government employees, because they're lazy, and they're, unless they really hate you, they're not going to come to your house generally. What really befuddles them is if you're not using the same crap that everybody else is using. And so I literally worked with people that worked for, those organizations that have letters in their names, and they're like, yeah, I've got, a phone that's 15 years old, and it literally is untrackable because we don't even have stuff to track it because it doesn't work that way. I'm like, huh, that tells you something. And so, low tech is really effective. So, if you just don't want to participate, it will take you some energy to set up a wired home network. But you can do that, and it's effective. And then nobody cares about Wi-Fi because you don't have any. So you don't have to worry about people on your network. At least from the wireless perspective. So that's something to think about. Conversely, Steve was talking about war driving. How about war flying? So, one of the fun things now is if you're a nefarious person, you can go out there and buy a drone, and you can fly a drone 3 or 4 miles away from, wherever. And it is not hard to put all of that tech on the drone and fly around and snoop people's networks, look in their houses, do all kinds of stuff. What people used to be concerned about, what was that old Mel Gibson movie where the government came for him? There was the black helicopters, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I saw it a long, long time ago, but anyway, that it doesn't matter. The point is not just the government has black helicopters. I mean, we've had all those New Jersey drones, which probably belong to the government. However, there's plenty of those kinds of things flying around. And hey, if you live in Montana and it's not a Chinese spy balloon, it's probably some asshole from California with his DJI that's looking in your window. So, you're basically screwed. You're not going to hide. If you're talking about network security, it's very difficult. You can't insulate yourself physically anymore. And it is also very difficult technologically to insulate yourself. So, I was going to start this whole thing out, and then you totally distracted me, man, with your tangential.
Tangerial. Totally tangerial, dude.
Social engineering. So good. But, so what's interesting is, we went from a world of, what people would say inefficiency with paper stuff, and you'd have people fill things out and carbon copy or triplicate or whatever. But the thing was, it was housed in a place, and you had to send your goons there to rifle through it in the middle of the night and then get discovered and be on the New York Times front page for Watergate or whatever. You can do that crap now. If you're China and you pop the NSA and export a whole bunch of classified information, nobody's ever going to know, because, when the U.S. government finds out, they're not going to let that shit out. So, what chance do you or I have when, they or them or whoever it is, and that you know, steals my information or snooping through my personal, you know, digital papers, you know, if you, they don't get caught, they don't get caught. Right. And so, when I was in the, working in the government space, they were big on, you know, it's the, what, fourth dimension? Is that what that was? You were in there before I was, but they were like, oh, it's the fourth dimension of the battle space. Yeah. You know, it's really cutting edge. We got to have fourth dimensional warriors. I'm like, oh yeah, what's that look like? Well, the army put some goggles on some dipshits to stand behind trees, and that's what it looks like. Yeah, that's worked out well.
Yeah, it's worked out. So Eddie just posted a comment in the chat that I need to address, and the end user license agreements, right? So most of you, and everybody's guilty of this, don't say you're not, because if you do, you're a liar. Everybody's clicked through the user agreement, right? And they've done it, you know, I want to get to my app, I want to get to my phone. You do it when you log into an Apple device for the first time, you log in, it doesn't matter what it is. First time you log in, you're going to see the EU LA, which is the end user license agreement, right? You should read the fine print, because if you have TikTok on your phone or you have Red Note on your phone, guess what? It's phone home everything you do on your phone, because when you click through those user agreements, you give them permission to spy on you. And there's no law on the planet that gives you any recourse if you voluntarily sign up for, you know, distant end spying by China. And that's why TikTok's not on my devices, Red Note's not on my devices, WhatsApp's not on my devices, Facebook's not on my devices, any Instagram or the rest are not on my devices. I don't even have, you know, anything. The only thing I have loaded is Twitter, and that's it. I don't have anything else loaded. Well, Telegram, but now Telegram's being monitored too. So, and even Signal was funded by the CIA, and Signal, just assume they're listening to everything you're doing. So that end user license agreement, you should probably read the fine print to see what they're actually collecting on you, because they are collecting on you. And I don't know if everybody's noticed it or not, but since 2024, the start of 2024, every single tech company has updated their end user license agreement. And if you go read it, what you're going to see is they've updated their end user license agreement to give Europe the power to spy on you, to give the US government the power to spy on you, and you voluntarily sign up for it. So the notion of privacy, long gone, especially with AI now. So that's why I say, if you minimize your footprint, and you're never going to stop all of your information being out, especially if you buy a house. You buy a house, the county assessor has every bit of information published online. They can find who you are. They can find your house. They can, all those things, the county assessor's office. And it's usually, you know, searchable to the open internet.
I've got one for you too that's even more fun than that. So I was doing a little consulting on the side, you know, being one of these basement dwellers, and literally had a conversation with a large organization that a lot of you would probably recognize. And they were like, hey, you know, we're rolling out this new technology, and I'm not going to disclose it here, but anyway, the point is you can go out and buy spy software to put on your employees' computers, and they are going to have no idea that it's there. It runs in the background. But this specific solution and the conversation around it was from the enterprise perspective, well, we're not really sure who works for us, because we have a lot of employees and we're not really sure what they're doing. And so, you know, we bought the software to figure that out. It's like, okay. And, you know, this software records everything that they do on their screen. It records anything that the microphone picks up in their, you know, place that they're working, which a lot of them work from home. And we can choose when it flags. We give it a set of parameters, and when those parameters are met, it will turn on the camera. There's an infrared light in a lot of the cameras on these computers, or on a phone. They have company managed cell phones, so that's even more scary, and that's kind of where I'm going with this. But so we're using this software, and essentially we're turning on the camera and microphone in these people's houses whenever we want, because it's our device and they work for us. So it's our right to know what they're doing when they're doing it. And I was like, so, you know, if you have an employee that's, you know, working in their bedroom because they live in an apartment, and for whatever reason, you're turning that stuff on at 9 o'clock at night and they're not working, how are you going to explain that? And they're like, well, you know, that's not really our concern, because they signed an agreement that says to use our technology, we can do what we want with it. And so my point with that is, these are the people that, you know, you are working for, essentially. And until they get sued out of oblivion, which I hope they do, you know, they're going to do it. And there was zero. I had multiple executive level people and lawyers on the phone. There was zero like, should we be doing this? Is this ethical? Maybe it's our problem that we don't actually know who works for us. No. They were more worried about, I don't care if it's your bedroom after hours. Like, it's our right to see what you're doing. And if you don't like it, you shouldn't work for us. But we're not going to tell you that we're doing it. So that's corporate America today. And again, this is a big company that a lot of you would recognize. So there's that. And then the other portion of it is, a lot of companies use an enterprise managed solution on your phone. And they're like, hey, you know, you need to check your email. You need to, you know, log into your Teams app or whatever to attend meetings. You need to install that on your phone. And when you do that, you click through that license agreement. And what it does is it adds a secondary profile to your phone. And it does the pretty much the same thing I was just talking about, where they can turn on your camera. They can listen. They can track your metadata, which means the phone will tell them how fast you're going, where you're going, where you've been going, where you went. So they can look essentially at whatever the heck they want about your life as your employer, and you do what they will with that information. And if, you know, they want to use it for something that, you know, some of us, you know, straight edged people, or I don't know, whatever you want to call it, moral compass, perhaps, we would maybe find it objectionable. Yeah, they can do whatever they want with it, and they probably aren't going to find it objectionable to leverage that however they want. So there was a lot, and I know Steve has opinions, because I remember during the days of COVID, him and I had some side conversations about such things. Employers were absolutely utilizing that kind of stuff to target employees who they thought were troublemakers, rule breakers, insider threats. You're on mute. So
I was one of them. I was one of those troublemakers. You draw a line in the sand. You're like, this is my line. That's too far. Right. Like I was like, I don't get the whole, you know, return to the office policy. I think it's stupid. In fact, I think the whole return to office is retarded, because COVID forever changed the landscape. And this thought process that you have to move people back to the office, it was just a way to move people out of the company, right? And to bring in more lemmings. And the same thing with COVID, right? When they started pushing to, you know, upload your COVID tests and whether you've been vaccinated or not, none of their fucking business, right? So all of those things have shifted the bar. So now companies have more latitude to collect on you than they did before. And literally under U.S. Title 50 and U.S. Title 10, it's illegal to collect on American citizens on American soil if you're not an intelligence agency and you're not investigating some kind of terrorist activity. So they've skirted the laws. They've created more laws now that have enabled them to continue the malfeasance that they had before. So it, like I said, minimizing your footprint is a big step towards securing your home. Where are we at? Coming up on an hour. So about 7 more minutes and then we'll wrap this up. Look, this is going to be a 3-part series. And I've got a couple other guys that we're going to add to this. So this will get into like a round table with security guys. But if you had a top three for people to do right now to secure their home, what would that be?
So number one is you need to change your thinking and stop trusting people. It doesn't, and my point with the whole employer thing is, you know, most people would trust who they're working for to some degree. Like, well, they're ethical, or if they're not ethical, they'd at least get sued. So I know they're not gonna, you know, watch me in my bedroom. You are wrong. So, you know, number one, you need to change your thinking and realize that whoever they are, they're not here to help you, and they don't have your best interests in mind. So, you know, I don't care if it's your doctor, if it's your employer, if it's the church you go to. When we're looking at, you know, the information warfare space, your data, or, you know, you're involved in data, like, hey, think about this. You go to a church, or you go to some kind of a collective meeting of, you know, some people don't like those other people because of whatever. Are there cameras in those rooms? Because you're on camera and there is facial recognition. So you are there. So, you know, mentally, you need to realize that the world we live in now has changed significantly in the last 5 years. And what you think is, you know, private, privileged, you know, I have a right to fill in the blank. Great. Assume you don't. Change your thinking. I don't care if you want to argue, you know, that you do, you have a right. Great, whatever. But I can promise you that there are people that are not your friends that are going to use whatever they can against you. And you need to realize that's just the reality. So it's that idea of, you know, we used to not live in a bad neighborhood or a bad area if we could, because we didn't want to expose ourselves to that risk of.
And we lost you. Yeah, you're digital
physical
now.
Harm, whatever.
Hey, you went digital for a minute. You still there?
Drinking. Oh, I can still hear my
wife. Yeah, you're like breaking up.
All right.
So something about a few years ago, that now he's gone. So, well, my top three is, number one, limit the number of devices that you have active in your house at any one time. Number two, keep everything you have up to date, as up to date as possible. And number three, assume that if you're on the current version, that there's going to be AI on whatever platform you're using. Doesn't matter if it's a tablet, doesn't matter if it's a laptop, doesn't matter if it's a phone. AI, they're rolling out AI to everything. If you have an iPhone 16, you have AI. If you have the latest version of Windows 11 and you have Copilot enabled, then they're scraping your keystrokes and all your data and all your metadata. If you've had Siri or you've had Google, I guarantee you that Google's been paying attention for a lot longer than you think, as well as Siri. So minimize your footprint, and that will help. The other thing that I would say, especially given what Seth was talking about, is if you find out what has a camera in your house, because you'd be surprised what has cameras on it now. Like, I don't know if most people have a new car, just my Bronco out there, that thing's got 10 cameras on it.
I'm back.
You don't think that those cameras can literally monitor everything you're doing and they can turn those on remotely? They absolutely can. So turn the Wi-Fi off in your vehicle. I mean, ask yourself, what do you need it for? So I was just following up with what you were saying with my top three. And, you know, and I'll encapsulate all this for Substack so that you have a, you know, go-to list of things, a punch list, if you will, so that you can actually do something with this information. And the other thing too is be mindful of the license agreements that you're agreeing to, because you would be surprised what's in that fine print. And the E911 service for your phone has changed, so they can collect on you all the time now. So I loaded my phone. My phone is now non-Google graphene, and there are some limitations to it, I will tell you right now. Like, Google Maps doesn't work, and most of the software that's connected to Google Play, that shit doesn't work if you don't load the Google apps, Google Play. But I can tell you the piece of my, and by the way, the autocorrect on graphing is retarded. It's totally retarded. And it just randomly changes words while you're sending message. You can like type it out, look at it, hit send, it'll change a word. That's how retarded it is. But even with that, I've changed my habits with my phone. And I've limited the number of applications I have on my phone. I've limited the number of things that are running in the background. Same with my laptop, same with my desktop. And I haven't, you know, upgraded to the latest and greatest version of the operating system. But again, I have other things running that tell me if somebody's logged into the, you know, is broken into my box. And the more savvy you get, the more investment you put into technology, the better off you're going to be at disconnecting from the grid and disconnecting, or at least minimizing your footprint on the grid. There's no taking you completely out of it anymore. This mindset that you're a sovereign citizen with AI, sorry, it's all gone now.
Good luck.
Yeah. So any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
So I would say change your mindset. Spend some time reading the end user agreements. Like the stuff that you're using, go look up the agreements and read them. That should probably change your mindset right there. Don't trust the authorities. So, you know, don't trust the government. Don't trust, I was saying before, your doctor, your employer. Like, just don't assume that you have privacy. Whatever information that they have on you, don't assume that that's not going to be shared or that that's protected. That's the other side of it. So you just need to change your mindset. And then, you know, do some research on, to what you're talking about, Steve, with, like cars eavesdropping or whatever. You can go to YouTube and do some searching for, how to find hidden cameras in your house or, detecting hidden cameras in a hotel room. There's people that have done whole videos on, how that tech works, and you can go buy random stuff off of eBay or Amazon for a few bucks, and, you know, try it out, see if there's actually, you know, if you want to know if there's cameras in your house, because a camera can be so small now that you're not ever going to know. If there's something that looks like black plastic on your refrigerator, it could have a camera. I don't really think there's any refrigerators that I know of that have a camera, but just as an example.
Well, they have screens. They have screens now, so a screen can have a camera on it.
Yeah. 100%. And it's hooked to Wi-Fi, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. But a good way, like if you're just like, what are you guys talking about? You can literally go to YouTube and do some learning, YouTube University. And you know, take the time to do that. And I would highly encourage people to, you know, be skeptical and curious and stop accepting that technology is your friend. Same thing with like, even our banks, like to your point about digital footprint. Well, I pay in cash. And, you know, I go to the bank. Yeah. Well, do you think the, when you opened that bank account 20 years ago or 50 years ago, you might've filled out some paperwork. Do you think between now and then the bank was required by the US government to send the government all of that information after they digitized it? The answer is yes. I worked in anti-money laundering, counterterrorism post 9/11. You know what 9/11 did? Completely obliterated all of our privacy, all of it. That's the Patriot Act, in case you were wondering. So, you know, you exist. If you exist on paper, if you have a social security number, a birth certificate, you know, I'll say this just mindset wise. This is my last random thing. Elon Musk, right? Doge guy. Yeah. PayPal. Yeah, he came from PayPal. So PayPal was the first way to digitally send money outside of the government systems. So he developed a way for entities to interact with one another and transfer secure information at scale globally. He comes and works for the U.S. government later on. He has access to all of the U.S. government information, all of the records of all of the agencies. He also happens to be the guy that owns X, which has all of the people's interactions and all of the data that you would need for AI, building bots, or creating a tremendous data set of people to put on a watch list. He also happens to be the guy that is building rockets that has government defense contracts that are largely classified and go into the black budget category, which also means he's probably doing other stuff. And he might also be a guy involved in brain science and how to put computer chips in people's brains. And I don't know, if you put all those things together, it's almost like you could potentially take a lot of, you know, what we think is private information and use it against people at some point. So not saying that's going to happen. I mean, that's definitely firmly tinfoil hatty, but it's literally one guy in his career. So, and if he doesn't do it, somebody else will probably try and figure it out. So understanding the different pieces of the puzzle and changing your mindset and realizing like, you're not going to disappear into the ether digitally. And so you need to understand at least enough to know what your exposure is, how much information can be used against me, how much information am I giving off? What is my digital footprint, as it were? And I'm sure we'll get more into that, but there's no avoiding
next episode. Yeah, we'll get into that next episode. But some of the homework that I would suggest is walk around your house and do a physical count of how much technology is communicating to the internet. I think you're going to be surprised at what you have versus what you thought you had. And if you have a family and you have kids and they have devices, I guarantee you should walk through your house and see what's communicating and what they're doing and how they're doing it. Because, and I'll get into this when I talk about social media, there's social media is designed for your kid to be addicted to it. Social media is designed for your kid to interact with it as much as possible. So the more that you can limit, the more that you can then keep them away from the technology, the more connected they'll be to the real world, the more connected they'll be to their friends, and the more connected they'll be to you. So word of advice. And that starts with figuring out how many devices you have in your house and what those devices are doing, who they're communicating with. You can do a very simple log trace on your most of the routers out there that will show you which IPs are going outbound and where they're connecting to. And then you can do a lookup to see where those IPs are. You're going to be surprised at where your information's going and how much is going, right? So that should be the homework until next week, or at least later this week. So we're going to do this. We were going to do this last Friday. We didn't get a chance to do it because we were both, you know, slammed. But we'll do this again this week at some point and follow up with this. In the meantime, I'll get a Substack posted. Seth, I appreciate you jumping on and doing this. And I know it's a Sunday, so I know you got a lot going on too. But folks, take a look at what you have in your house. Take a look at what it's connected to. And until next week, God bless. One team, one fight.